This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Oh, we got your Friday mailbag questions coming up. All answered 100% correctly, and this is so key. Or your money back, that just in a second. But first, the Tampa Bay Rays split their series. And look, I think we're starting to see a trend here, Steve. When you look at this Angels series, really the last three, if you will. Remember the starting pitching that everybody seemed to be worried about? And, of course, we've talked about how the bullpen was supposed to be the strength of the team, and It turns out it hasn't been. Tell you what.
I got an interesting stat on that one, too, though. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, let me just say this. This Ryan Pepio, this dude's filthy, man. And what I love is, so he pitches this game, and he throws six solid innings, and he couldn't look better, right? What we didn't know is that the guy was hurling before he went out there. And Cash, they go, well, did you think about maybe he shouldn't pitch? He goes, no, he was our pitcher. We didn't have anybody. He was our guy. He had to go out there. But it's and I don't think it was nerves. I mean, I guess he was under the weather quite a bit. You didn't know it on the mound. I mean, the guy was just locked in, man. He was so good. And so the Rays, they win a close game. It was one of those games where it felt kind of like the previous games where maybe they were going to let it slip away. But 2-1 victory, and so they split with the Angels, and now it's off to the Evil Empire and to play the New York Yankees for three. But I was really, really impressed with what they've done on the mound in the starters. And they only had really about the three guys they pitched in relief were about the only three they thought they had available.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did a good job as well, including Clevinger, who was terrific. And so, yeah, you haven't lost a series now in about three or four. And now you got to go up to, the AL East leading New York Yankees, and those battles are always really good. So this will be a great test for them this coming weekend.
Well, let me drop this stat on you, because a team that's got a bad bullpen.
Uh-huh.
Do you know that they're 4-1 in games decided by one run? And they are 7-1 in games decided by one or two runs.
Which would tell you the bullpen, when needed, has locked it down, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only game that they've lost in those situations was Pete Fairbanks two nights ago.
Fairbanks twice, actually. I mean, they came from behind.
Well, the one Fairbanks won, they lost by four because it were three. It was a grand slam walk off, but
yeah, that's true. But I mean, really, it was
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen didn't work that one.
A hit would have won the game. He just happened to hit it out of the park. But
by definition of a close game,
right? That's correct.
They look really right. Good.
No, you're right. I think Fairbanks has blown two saves is what I believe. Certainly those two. And mostly because his command wasn't what it should be. But and the other thing is, how about this Ahmed Rosario?
He's been fantastic.
The dude just continues to get big hits and infield hits and extra base hits. He's got a 10-game hitting streak, which at this part of the season, they haven't played that many games. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's the longest by any Ray this season. I'm like, I can't think of anyone's come close to that. I could be wrong, but
I don't think so.
But yeah, he's been, I mean, isn't it, granted, other teams do this too, but it's amazing how the Rays find these guys.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's a good player. It's not like, he's a nobody.
Well, he's a known, he came from Cleveland, right?
Right.
Isn't that right?
But you bring him in to serve a specific role, but now he's had to step up and do more because of injury.
Yeah.
And you just lack of depth right now with Josh Lowe out and Brandon Lau out and Taylor Walls out and, go through the list. But you put him in there and he thrives.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this time and time again with this Rays organization. Like, they're really good at finding the right guys for their system.
Yeah.
And then helping those guys achieve their potential. It's you see it year in and year out with this organization. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think that, you know, the one thing that they find with these players is they get guys, and this is big, is they get guys who will fight you at every bat, every pitch. They run to first base hard. You know, they never lack for effort. And he's one of those big effort guys, Rosario, as he's had a couple of infield hits. One, I think, was a game winner the other night. But, you know, he's just a guy that has been, you know, just like you said, typical Rays addition where he can do a little bit of everything. And then you look up and boom, 10-game hitting streak. You're like, wow. You know, Richie Palacios is playing better. He's gotten some big knocks lately. Anytime you win a game 2-1, that's a complete game effort there, you know, with the defense, the offense, the whole thing. But helped them to get a 2-0 lead in the first, and that's all they needed, as it turned out. So it's hard to hold that lineup with Mike Trout and those guys to just one run, but they managed to do it. So, yeah, pretty good series. I mean, they split it with the Angels. They won the series overall for the season, which is always important. And like I said, I think, you know, this weekend's games are going to be really must-watch TV, I think, with the Yankees. I think it's going to be fun up there in New York.
Well, and you know, you can't lose. You can't win the division in April. You're not going to lose it if you lose the series in April.
No.
You've played so far. But, you know, it can go a long way into just, you know, staying near the top of the division right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the worst thing is when you have a division as loaded as the AL East is that
you can't start falling
behind. You're trying to climb over a bunch of teams and a bunch of good
many.
Teams. Yeah, it's a bunch of good teams. So, you know, you don't need to be in first right now, but you just want to stay within striking distance.
Right.
You know, you don't want to have to fall too far back. And like I said, this series, you know, you lose 2 out of 3, you're not out of it. You're whatever, but
yeah.
But you know, if you could win 2 out of 3, you know, yeah, now you're staying right there with them. Like, you know.
It sets up nicely because you'll be, you know, close to the top of the division, but then you'll have those games at home. So you want to get as many as you can on the road. And I mean, the Yankees are better, you know, with Soto. I mean, they're just better right now than they were a year ago. And I think last year was a bit of an aberration for them with the injuries they had. You know, missing the playoffs is not something they're used to doing. So they're playing with purpose now.
I mean, it gave John Sterling extra time to sit at home and realize that's what he wanted to do. No, from now on.
Exactly. Well, we didn't even have a postseason, so I was home in October, and then November, and then December. And he started going, okay, John, I get it. Oh, by the way, Sterling's going to be honored during this
Saturday.
Weekend.
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the Rays, part of history, part of Yankee history again.
It seems like every time they honor anybody, the Rays right there in New York.
Derek Jeter Day, and he hits a grand slam. Like, what's up? You guys 3,000th hit or something like that up there. Like, they're part of every
Mariano
Yankees.
Rivera's last regular season game was, I think the Rays were in New York for that series, if I recall.
Were they?
I think so, if I recall right.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the backdrop to a lot of good Yankee moments, I suppose. But, so, yeah, Sterling will be given his silver microphone or whatever they give you after you retire 40-something years later. But, yeah, good weekend. And then, you know, we await, as we're doing this podcast, who's going to be the scoring champion. You'll have to wake up and find that out. But it's close, man. Couldn't be any closer.
So, Cooch entered 6 points ahead of Nathan McKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
McKinnon's got his last game, as we're taping this, against Edmonton at home.
Yeah.
He got 2 points in the first period, 2 assists. Okay. Actually got in like the first 10 minutes.
Okay.
So now he's 4 back with 2.5 periods of play. Now, as we're taping this, it's about almost halfway through the game. It's mid-second. Colorado's on a power play right now. So,
okay.
But if he were to get 6 points tonight.
If he ties
him, Nathan McKinnon wins the Art Ross Trophy.
Ooh, man.
Because the first tiebreaker is goals.
Is goals, yeah.
And Cooch has 44 goals, which is great, but McKinnon's got more and does not have 100 assists.
How, I mean, not knowing what the other number of writers are going to vote, but like, how much of a boost would it be for Kucherov if he does win the points?
I don't know if he wins. If McKinnon wins the scoring title, I think McKinnon's going to get the MVP.
Yeah.
I think for Cooch to get the MVP, he needed to get 100 assists of late, which he did, which is going to that's going to help tremendously.
Probably needs to win the scoring title.
And if he wins the scoring title, then I think he's got a legit shot at winning it. Not, you know, I think he deserves it, but
right. You know, but it seems like that's the other piece for him, right? It seems
McDavid's like, missed some games down the stretch, you know, a little bit dinged up in that. You know, he got 100 assists, but by his standards, this isn't his best season. So I think you get penalized for that sometimes when you've been the MVP before, you've won the Art Ross before, and this wasn't as good of a season. So, you know, he's had a tremendous season, but you kind of get punished for that, the expectations.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it sometimes, you know, for instance, the coach of the year, a lot of times it's a team that wasn't expected to do much that did well.
All the time,
instead of the coach that has a really good team and did great.
Instead of John Cooper.
John Cooper.
Yeah.
Gets punished for that.
Right, right, right.
You know, so I think McDavid, I mean, he'll get some votes, no question. Auston Matthews not hitting 70 goals probably hurts him a little bit in the MVP voting.
Yeah.
Tremendous. I mean, 69 goals is still tremendous.
I was going to say.
You know, he was trying to become the ninth player ever to hit 70. Had he done that, it made it easier to vote for him for first place.
Magic number, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Well, those round numbers, and when you start going, only 9 guys have ever done it. Which would have been,
but at the end of the day, it's one more goal, right?
Like, and then Sidney Crosby was talked about in this conversation, but they didn't make the playoffs.
So yeah, that's going to be tough.
He was kind of carrying that team towards the playoffs. They missed it, but so I don't. So I really think it's probably down to MacKinnon and Cooch. I think McDavid will get a lot of points. I think Matthews will get a lot of points, but I legitimately think if MacKinnon wins the Art Ross, I think he gets it. Cooch wins the Art Ross, then it could go either way. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Matthews wins it or something, but I think that's kind of how it's going to go.
Yeah, it's a close one, though. I mean, there are whoever wins the award will be deserving. Let's put it that way. And the notion,
no question, it's not like if the other one wins it, you can't go, that was awful,
right? I mean, I don't. And listen, I don't understand. Yeah, there's a lot of people in Tampa, and understandably so, they're hoping and rooting for Cooch to get it. That's human nature. You know, if you're a fan of the Lightning or you live here and you watch him play, you certainly think he deserves it, and you're rooting for him to get it. But to suggest that it's a crime if he doesn't, or that it's some blight on humanity, like, no, it's not. Like, these other guys are very deserving, man. And this is – I was listening to a hockey writer I forget what network today. And, you know, you just kind of made the point that, like, look, no one can really complain about whoever doesn't get it, right? Like, whoever wins this award will be deserving.
Yes.
And it's that close. Like, you can't say, oh, well, yeah, but, I mean, come on. I mean, really? Like, no, there's at least 3, maybe 4 really deserving players. Mm-hmm. And they can only pick one. So, you know, the votes will be tabulated and writers vote different ways for different reasons. Yep. Trust me, I know this because I've been part of that in various venues in the NFL. And I just think that, you know, Cooch has had an unbelievable year. He has won an MVP. And so I wonder about this, Steve. If you've
McKinnon has not won one.
And to me, if you won one already, it's great to win 2. Well, what if MacKinnon doesn't have another season like this? And I think he probably will have more great seasons. But, like, it could be hard to top, right? Like, all things considered.
Sometimes these awards start to go, well, it's his turn.
It's his time, right? You know, it's his turn.
McDavid's won one. Yeah. Cooch has won one. Yeah. Like, right. This is MacKinnon's turn. Yeah, some that vote that way.
Right, it's time to reward a guy that's been a very good player for a long time, put himself right there, and this is his time. You know, like, and then some may think that way. My point is, you can't, you know, put on the blue goggles and just say, you know, I won't accept anybody else winning this award, because frankly, it's really close, too close to call. It's been close all year, and all of them are deserving. So, anyway, that's just the way I feel about that. All right, we got some mailbag questions that we will wrap up this week with. Of course, the NFL draft coming up just next Thursday. Man, we are so close. We're going to have coverage in the Tampa Bay Times on TampaBay.com, as we always do. Got a story for Sunday talking about their biggest need. I don't think they'll fill it in the first round. A week of stories, of course, leading up to the draft next Thursday. But for mailbag questions, let's go ahead and get started.
Well, since we were talking Lightning, we'll start with that a little bit here. Michael asked, how useful can Anthony Duclair be to help break down the details of the Panther system?
It's a great question. I guess he would know the system, Steve. I think more importantly, maybe, is he knows he's been on the ice with these players, and he knows kind of how they play and how they think and what it's like to be on the ice with them and what they're trying to do. I've always thought, you know, I go back to the Tom Moore-isms, but it's about players, not plays. You know, I mean, the game, yeah, there's systems and coaching and all that matters. But at the end of the day, you know, how do you stop the guy in front of you, you know? And I think he'd have a pretty good feel for what these guys do, having played with and against them a lot. I don't know what that counts for. Like, everybody's always talking about, like, well, this guy came from this team. And, you know, like in the NFL, it's very common to get a player. And then for whatever reason, the next week you're playing that team. And we always ask, hey, how much of a help can he be? You know, and some of the, well, I mean,
I think
help,
in the NFL, there's a little more. You may know some signs, some signals.
Yeah.
You know, some tells of this. I think in hockey and particularly, you know, we'll say Duclair in this series. Yeah. Like, I don't think the Lightning don't know what Florida's doing and trying to do.
No, I think
Florida's extremely good at executing their forecheck and getting on you in your defensive zone. Yeah. And the whole key of the series isn't going to be knowing what Florida's going to do.
No,
it's going to be can Tampa Bay execute in their own end and get the puck out of their zone when they need
to. That's going to be the key. Can they have any possession time at all?
Yes. Yeah. Is Florida going to force a lot of turnovers in the which when the Lightning are not playing well, that's what they do.
That's how they give up scores. Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's any
secrets
in this. I think, you know, football where you're calling plays, each play, the coaches.
Yeah, signals, you know, and certain situations.
Yeah. You know, okay, when they line up like this or do this, they tend to do this. You know, I mean, those kind of things. And you can get that through scouting and tape and stuff too. But if you get a guy from the other team, it's a little easier.
Yeah.
Hockey's such a continuous flow sport where you're not sitting there calling plays.
Right.
Like, I mean, occasionally off a face-off or something. Maybe there's a little bit of that. Hey, on face-offs, watch this play.
Yeah.
You know, watch, you know, they're going to try to set up Tkachuk here or, you know, maybe there's a little bit of that you can learn.
You kind of know their options. Think,
yeah. And look, these are division rivals. They faced in the playoffs two of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice is a coach. I mean, he was the longest tenured coach before Cooper in Winnipeg, and now he's in Florida. I mean, you know, they know each other. I don't think there's a lot of like, hey, we don't know what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to come down to execution because Florida's really good at executing their forecheck.
Yeah.
And you know, Tampa Bay's in their own end has to match that.
If you've been on the ice with these guys and you felt them, right? Like it's kind of like in football, you know, within the divisions, these teams play each other twice a year. So when you're on the grass with them, you really get a feel for the players and how they operate, how they run routes, how they, you know, come off the ball. Like, to me, that's more important than figuring out what they're trying to do. Like you said, everybody knows how good Florida is forechecking and all that.
Yep.
And that you have to be really on your game or you're going to turn it over and it's going to be in the back of your net. So that's no surprise. But in as much as, you know, it wasn't that long ago he was there, there might be some hits he could give certain players about other players on that team. I don't know.
Yep.
But I don't think it's a huge advantage.
Kyle asks, what are your thoughts of the Coyotes? He said more than likely move, but now it's been announced they're moving to Utah next season. And how will this impact the NHL with future expansions?
I've just read about this briefly. I haven't thought much about it, to be honest with you. My first reaction is it's disappointing. And I don't know the politics in Phoenix or Arizona in particular, you know, why they couldn't get an arena there, why playing where the Suns play wasn't an option anymore. I know they ended up playing in a college arena, and it's not been a very successful franchise of late, to say the least. But I feel bad when cities lose their franchises, you know, and, you know, Utah has the NBA and not much else, but
they have MLS as well.
MLS. Yeah, that's true.
The same owner, Ryan Smith, and his wife, I think it's Ashley, own all three teams now in Utah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you understand why he's going there, but I'm always disappointed when an area loses a major league team, because I know it affects a lot of people in my business, a lot of people, you know, the families of the team, the players themselves in the front office. And now they got to relocate their kids and they got to, you know, look, a lot of hockey teams have moved, you know, in the past, and they will continue to if the markets don't work. But I'm kind of disappointed by that, you know, for the people of Arizona. And I don't know why it didn't work there, or they had trouble. Obviously, it's a stadium situation, but it doesn't sit well with me when that happens.
Yeah, a couple things. And Gary Bettman has pushed hard to keep the team in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And it just isn't working with the arena.
Yeah,
they did a vote. It didn't work. They're trying. They'd like to move more to Scottsdale area.
Yeah, that's where all the
where the money is, and
yeah,
but it just hasn't worked out. Now they were trying to go buy a piece of land at an auction, and so finally they just said, okay, we've got to move this. Now the owner Murillo there has 5 years. He's keeping the Coyotes' names and all the trademarks and all that. Utah will be a new team.
Yeah.
But he's keeping that. He's got 5 years. If he can have a fully completed arena up to NHL standards, he's getting an expansion team. But the clock has started, like 5 years now.
Okay.
And it's got to be completed and everything else. So, you know, he's still trying to get a team, and he got paid $1 billion for the franchise. The expansion fee he's going to have to pay is $1 billion.
Wow.
So the money that he made off this sale, he's going to have to, if he wants to do that, and he says he does, he's got 5 years to do it and then pay the $1 billion back, essentially. And then the NHL went and turned around and sold the team to the Smith family for $1.2 or $1.3 billion. So, and the amazing thing is that Ryan Smith and Murillo have never talked.
Wow.
The NHL was the broker in the middle of all this.
Now, are they going to play, you know, where the Utah Jazz play? Are they in Salt
Lake,
I guess?
Yes, which the other interesting part of that is I guess that arena has 12,000 seats.
Oh, okay.
It's not big.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's bigger than Mullet Arena where they were playing for 5,000 in Arizona.
But you'd like to have 19 or 17.
But it's not the 18, 19, 20,000 that most of the arenas around the league are.
Yeah.
Although apparently they've already got 11,000 deposits for tickets down.
Oh, yeah.
So
new merch.
Yeah, and this year the team will just be known as either Utah or Utah HC. They've hired a firm, and they're gonna work on the name over the next. And the owner said, we don't want to rush the name. It is going to be Utah, not Salt Lake. He did say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, losing Phoenix, and it's kind of it's a big deal. I mean, television market size, Phoenix is 11.
Yeah, it's not small.
You know who's 12 television market size?
Tampa.
Yes. I mean, it's you're losing top 10 or pretty close television market.
Yeah.
Which is why Gary Bettman never wanted to leave that market.
Right. And probably
why baseball doesn't want to leave Tampa Bay.
Right. Same thing. And also those areas are growing as opposed to some other areas that are.
I mean, Salt Lake City television market size is 27.
Yeah, it's nothing.
You know, big market, but not.
But
you know,
by
comparison. Yeah, you're losing a lot. You know, much like
slots.
You know, when the Rays were talked about going to name your city. Charlotte, market 21. Nashville, market 26.
Yeah.
San Antonio, market 31. Like,
right.
You know.
And look at the trend. Now, Charlotte's growing, obviously. But look at the trends of where, you know, some of these cities, where they're headed. I mean, brother, I can tell you the Tampa Bay area is swelling with people, especially as you know, they're all up north in the bedroom community up here, even like in Pasco and even Hernando County. I mean, I've never, it used to be on the Veterans Expressway or the Leroy Selman, whatever that I get on. It was a toll road and virtually nobody took it because it was a toll road. Now, oh my God.
Well, I live out Eastern Hillsborough County in
same thing, right?
Man, I mean,
yeah.
This area in the last 5 years, oh my goodness,
just booming. I mean, like you can't even recognize it. So yeah, it's that way, and that's why you don't want to lose. But I feel bad because I spent a lot of time in Phoenix. I think Phoenix, Scottsdale, it's too hot for me. But
it's a dry heat,
but it's a dry heat, but it's so is an oven, but it's a nice area. It's a growing area, and you know, it's one. It's a, look, this is a Sun Belt hockey team. You know, right? They put a lot of these teams California, Sun Belt, Florida, even, you know, Nashville. And those teams have been thriving, but this one was kind of disappointing that they're having to lose them. So good question, though.
All right, Michael asked, do you think Boston tanked to avoid playing the Lightning in the first round?
Well, was Lovie Smith coaching that team?
Well, let me put it this way.
Don't go leading the charge.
The next to last game, Boston, I think, had 16 shots on goal against Carolina.
What did they have in the final game?
The final game, they had 8 shots through 2 periods.
That's not good, right?
No.
I would say this.
Now, they also needed Florida to win in order to do that.
They could,
the last game, Florida was down 2-0 to Toronto after a period.
Florida could have out-tanked them if they wanted to, right?
Yes.
They were down 2-0. They could have just decided to, you know, we're going to play 3 lines and you know, whatever. It's really hard because there's another game involved. Like, if you're the only game, right, and if you win, this happens, or if you lose, that happens, then you can kind of control your own fate. And yes, brother, I have watched it firsthand. The race to the bottom for Jameis Winston. But
I think it's different than when you're picking an opponent to play in the postseason than trying as an organization
to try to get another draft pick. Yeah, I do too.
To try to get your quarterback that you want, or, you know, if you were the Blackhawks last year trying to tank to get Connor Bedard, or, you know, or any of those teams were trying to do that.
But who's to say, like, if you're Boston, who's to say you wouldn't have been better off playing Tampa?
I didn't watch the game, I'm not going to say I know the Boston team inside and out. My guess is they didn't tank, but was their effort and energy like what Tampa Bay's been playing the last 2 weeks since they clinched? You know, has the effort been 100%? Has it been playoff intensity? No. Like, right. We know we're in the playoffs. We're going to face one of these teams. We know these teams. They're all in the division.
Yeah.
Like, you know, were they going to sell out at all costs to win? No. Did they get down and get upset? No.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's just the way, you know, if you win, you have that ability, right? Like, you have that ability to coast or to give away games or not have the intensity because you've clinched, much like we saw with the Lightning when they lost 4 out of 5. You've earned that too, right? Like, you've earned that right to rest guys, not play as many minutes, whatever that is, sit goaltenders. I just don't think, I don't see how you could be deliberate when there's another game that you can't control. You know, I suppose you could and just roll the dice, but.
Well, I mean, you could be.
In the end, I don't think it matters in some ways, really. You could,
because if you lose the game, it didn't mean anything anyway, so.
Yeah, I suppose. I suppose.
I mean, I doubt they tanked it. I mean, but like I said, we're going to win this game, you know, given the fiery speech and the intermissions and.
Yeah.
No. You know, it's going through the motions. There's a lot of teams the last 2 weeks have been doing that in hockey.
Yeah. No one in there. This is our time. The speech, the U.S. Olympic speech at Lake Platte. Yeah, I didn't sense that, but who knows? And time will tell whether it benefits them or not, you know?
I mean, usually when you try to pick which team,
who's to say that the Lightning don't play well in the playoffs and in Boston gets upset?
Yeah. I mean, usually when you're trying to pick the team you're playing,
you pick wrong.
Isn't that the time when that's when everything gets shocked and surprised? And
yeah, it ticks off the other team too. How do you feel if you're the one that they're trying to say you're the easier opponent?
Yeah.
You know, well, we'll show you, you know, is this what you wanted? Okay. You got us. So yeah, I think that's a little trickier in this scenario.
All right. We'll switch to football real quick here. Greg asks, with the draft right around the corner, who is the best Buccaneer draft pick, worst pick, most surprising, and best undrafted free agent?
What? Okay, best pick.
I can think of a few.
Worst pick. Is that what you said?
Best pick, worst pick, most surprising.
Most surprising.
Best pick, take your pick. Leroy Salmon, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, Rondae Barber.
Yeah.
You can go Mike Evans, Levante David.
They have 5 Hall of Famers, or 4 Hall of Famers now. Well, 5 if you count a coach, I think.
Yeah, Lynch. No,
5 Hall, 5 Hall of Famers with Leroy. And So you start there.
Any Mike of Evans those guys, is going to be a Hall of Famer.
Mike will be a Hall of Famer. Levante, you could argue, is a pretty good pick. I don't know if he's going to make the Hall of Fame or not. And then you got Wirfs and Winfield and that sort of thing. So the story hadn't been completely written. I've always defaulted to what Warren Sapp told me, which is Leroy Solomon's the best buck there ever was. I mean, and for Sapp to give that up is something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back to that era and what Leroy had around him, which was nothing, because they weren't allowed to take really any good players off of any teams back in those expansion days.
Mm-hmm.
They were the absolute dregs. And, you know, for that guy to come in here and he was 256 pounds or whatever it was in a 3-4, double teamed a lot. And completely just dominate at a time when teams ran the ball a lot. They didn't drop back 25, 30 times. It was just a different game. And, you know, in 3 years, that defense got them to the NFC Championship game. And it was the Selman brothers, man, you know, and in particular Leroy. And then, you know, this doesn't necessarily count, but I think if you go off the field and you say, you know, who is one of the most beloved bucks, the biggest community guy, you know, Leroy checks all those boxes too.
See, we got a highway named after him.
Got a highway named after him.
Started
USF. Football at USF. I remember him coming to the Times and pitching mm-hmm. football for South Florida. That was his baby. So, you know, hard to, and look, they're all deserving, right? Like if you wanted to say, and this would be the most surprising Hall of Famer, I think, it would be Rondé Barber. You know?
Had trouble getting on the field his rookie year.
He didn't play at all. And nobody would have necessarily seen that coming.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe Rondé Barber, who's the most confident guy in the world. And perhaps his brother Tiki. But outside of that, you know, you don't expect this 5 foot, 9.5, you know, twin from Virginia. Who didn't play at all as a rookie? That was like a, you know, third round pick or whatever to do what he did. So it beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But I've always defaulted in, and I've asked Sapp, I've asked people, and a lot of them feel it was Leroy. You know that
mm-hmm.
and I think it's hard to compare eras anyway, right? Because football is different, and so like even with Mike Evans, you're going to see numbers, you know. Against players that didn't get that many targets or that many opportunities to make those catches. And the game has become a passing league. So there's a lot of statistics where it used to be, if you had 10,000 yards, you were a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame. Now you could just be a good receiver in your career with some longevity. So all that's kind of changed. As far as most disappointing, worst pick, there's been a lot.
I know who I would say the worst is.
Well, let me go through the. If you go to way back in the way back machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
A guy named Booker Reese was a pretty bad pick.
Mm-hmm.
Giving up a number one draft pick for the throwing Samoan Jack Thompson probably wasn't the best use. Giving up a number one for Chris Chandler, which wasn't drafted but was a trade,
mm-hmm.
probably wasn't the best use of a draft pick. And then you have the modern day. Right. I think everybody's going to look at Roberto Aguayo and say, you know, you gave up a third rounder for a kicker
mm-hmm.
that lasted all of really one season and wasn't very good. That entire 2016 draft is vaporized, by the way. 2016, we're in 2024, so very few players play 8 seasons. There isn't a single guy in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking Vernon Hargraves, Noah Spence, Roberto Aguayo. Those were the top three picks of that class. And none of them worked out. So it's gotten better since then.
I got another one for you. Bo Jackson.
Well, and Bo, to me, is in a different category. And yeah. I'll tell you why. He didn't play. But as my good friend Hugh Culverhouse, may he rest in peace. And if you don't know Hugh Culverhouse, I do a spot on Hugh Culverhouse. but back in the day, I can remember the press conference when, you know, Bo decided not to play. And the whole thing was messed up anyway, because I think if you recall, Bo was playing baseball at Auburn.
Yep.
And Culverhouse put him on one of his planes.
Yep. Said it, said it was NCAA approved.
Yeah, but it wasn't. And they took away his eligibility for baseball, man. I mean, he was in his final year at Auburn, and all of a sudden he was ineligible because he took a benefit from, of all people, an Alabama booster, right? Destroys an Auburn player. And, you know, he came down and he went fishing with Scott Brantley and Mark Cotney. And if that didn't do him in, you know, he just decided that he wasn't going to play here. So the day that they were supposed to sign him and he chose not to play, he decided to go play baseball. Culverhouse had a press conference and he says, "I was driving across the bridge today and I heard a song. You probably know it. Keep smiling, keep shining. That's what friends are for." And it was like, yeah, Dionne Warwick, we're quoting Dionne Warwick because you failed to sign. Arguably, and of course, Bo Jackson, right? Was there a better, I mean, Bo Jackson was Paul Bunyan, you know, like he was legendary. Bo knows and could do everything and all-star in baseball. Of course, tremendous football player when he finally got on the field. But yeah, he told you not to draft him. You did anyway. You could have traded the pick and gotten a ton of picks for him. But that was the mentality of the NFL back then. Players really didn't do that, right? They didn't hold out. They didn't, they might've held out for money, but they didn't say, "I'm not playing for this team." You know,
Elway did.
John did, but that, you know, as a quarterback, it didn't happen often. And when few teams would acquiesce when it did. Now that, you know, that was 84 when Elway did that. I think it was maybe prior to 84. I can't remember.
Yeah, Bo was 86.
Bo was after that. Okay. So it had happened before, but yeah, he just was never going to play here. And so you got nothing for him. And so that one hurt.
I mean, that's been a lot. That wasn't like, hey, we
it's
tried
not a bad
it,
choice.
It
I mean, everybody
out.
Would that have was... taken Bo Jackson one overall. Right, so you can't say that was a bad pick. It you should have done something else with it. So what do we agree on? Do we agree on the most surprising pick? I don't know who the most surprising pick would be. Surprising that they played well or surprising that they picked him at all? I mean, you could also have Aguayo in that category.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a surprise you would use a third rounder on a kicker.
Or you would do it a couple years later with Matt Gay.
But at least Matt could kick the ball. Like the funny
but
thing
I'm saying
about
that was surprising they took another kicker
extremely,
in the draft.
But it was too late. It was two rounds later, though, in the fifth. The thing about Aguayo that never made sense to me was when you looked at his stats at Florida State, he didn't kick anything 50 yards.
Nope.
Like it just never happened. And so, you know, not only did he melt down, you know, when he got to the NFL, but he also had no distance. He had no leg. So and to take him in the third round, of course, was fool's gold. But yeah. I mean, look, if we really put our minds to it, we could come up with quite a list. There's and not with Jason Light necessarily, but just there's been a lot of bad ones. And some good, but overall, you know, every team's gonna miss.
Yep.
The first round, quarterbacks, receivers, sometimes edge rushers, you know. Like I can go back and tell you, well, all you need to know is this. Here's an example. So when you say bad pick, okay, what's a bad pick? Well, was it a bad pick to take Cadillac Williams fifth overall? Well, Cadillac Williams turned out to be rookie of the year. You know, he's a pretty good player for about a season until he tore both patella tendons. And that ended his career. But you know who was available? And you can say this about a lot of teams that year.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers. And they needed a quarterback. And John Gruden worked them out with Jerry Rice at Cal. And John raved about his workout. I'll tell you what, man, that might have been the best workout I ever saw. Then the next year, so they don't take Aaron Rodgers, they get Cadillac. So now they don't need a running back, right? The next year, they're picking sixth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know who's available? Adrian Peterson. But they don't need a running back. So
didn't he have the best workout John's ever seen, too?
Yes. He said exactly the same thing. But with Peterson, he said, that might have been the best workout of anybody I've ever seen. So they didn't take AP, and they get Gaines Adams, who, if I just had to guess, blind guess, Gaines Adams may have had 12 sacks. And that might be generous in his career. Again, so sometimes it's not, you know, well, that's a horrible pick because the player didn't play well, and make Gaines rest in peace.
At 13 and a half sacks.
13. Boy, I was close. There's another guy, Eric Curry. How about that name from Alabama? Eric Curry, another edge rusher. I remember going up to Eric Curry after his rookie season, and somebody said, hey, Eric, you haven't had a sack in, maybe it was his second season. You hadn't had a sack in 15 games. 15 games. He's a first-round pick. He was like, 15 games? No, man. 15 games? Really? 15 games? So, yeah. Hadn't had a sack in 15 games. He goes, well, you know, the thing is, sometimes I get to the quarterback, but after I hit him, he gets rid of the ball, and then right before I hit him. Well, yeah, but that's not a sack. Like, the idea is you got to get the guy on the ground with the ball. Yeah. You know what a sack is, right?
He had 12 and a half sacks in his career.
12 and a half. And that – now, there's a bad pick, right? You take a guy, what was Eric Curry? Where was he drafted? Probably top 10, maybe?
Let's see. Where was he?
Seemed like they were always drafting edge rushers in the top 10.
Sixth overall. In the 93 draft.
And they got all of 12 sacks out of a guy that they took sixth overall? Read the names in that draft. What was ahead of them? Junior Seau, perhaps?
93 draft. Drew Bledsoe.
Okay.
Rick Meyer.
Okay.
Garrison Hurst.
Yeah.
Marvin Jones.
Okay.
John Copeland.
Okay. He was an offensive lineman.
Let's see. Who went after? Some of the guys that went after.
Some of the guys that went after that they could have had.
Couple Hall of Famers, 8th and 10th. Willie Rofe.
Oof.
And Jerome Bettis.
Not bad.
Lincoln Kennedy was 9th.
Another great player.
Curtis Conway was 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Everett was 14th. Sean Dawkins
was a damn good player.
Irv Smith, tight end.
Yeah.
Robert Smith, running back. Went 21.
Robert Smith played a long time in Minnesota. There were some good players, certainly better players than Eric Curry. But yeah, you know, sometimes it's not so much like, you know, like I said, Calic Williams, man. Well, you know, Calic got hurt.
To be honest, there wasn't many defensive ends in that draft. Dan Williams went after him, 27 sacks. Copeland had 24.
They just decided.
Dana Stubberfield at tackle had 53 and a half sacks.
Yeah, he did a little better. They just decided we need an edge rusher, and I think, again, it was, you know, kind of that SEC connection that they had going there for a while.
Well, Michael Strahan went in the second round that year.
The second round. Well, there's 40th, a Hall of Famer 40th you pick. Might have been a good edge rusher for you right there, Michael Strahan.
Now, the second pick for Tampa Bay that draft was Demetrius DeBose.
DeBose, yeah. Demetrius, it was tragic. He was really good friends with John Lynch, like really, really good friends, and lived in San Diego at one point. And when, I believe he went to Notre Dame, and it was a Stanford-Notre Dame thing, but they came in about the same time. And DeBose was tragically shot to death by, I think, policemen in San Diego. And if memory serves, they found him sleeping in somebody else's home, and something pursued after that, and he ended up getting shot to death.
Third round, Tampa Bay took Lamar Thomas.
Yeah, that didn't work out very well.
And then late in the third round, they took John Lynch.
Outstanding pick.
With the 82nd pick overall.
Outstanding pick. Had no idea where. Well, I knew at that time he was a safety, but and he didn't start as a rookie. They had Todd Scott in place of him. He was madder than hell when that happened. But, yeah, that was Sam Weich, who knew Bill Walsh a little bit because he had worked on his staff, and Walsh told him, you need to get this guy. And, you know, at some point after his rookie year, John, who was the first player drafted by the then Miami Marlins, or at least not the first player drafted, but threw out the first pitch in the minor leagues by the Marlins, he was a pitcher, and he really strongly considered going to baseball after his rookie year and playing baseball. Thank God he didn't.
They got Chidi Ahanotu in the sixth round of that draft.
It was a good pick. really good pick. She had a nice career.
Yep.
In fact, at one point, I believe they either franchised him. He ended up with like a $25 million contract. So he did well. Good player. Super Bowl player.
This is back when they had more than seven rounds in the draft, too.
Yeah. No, they did. They would have had 10, I think, back then, or 12.
It's like eight. It's like eight
when
this
I
year.
Started. Yeah. It was a lot. Good question. It again, it's very subjective, and I would not have a problem if somebody said Sapp. Certainly wouldn't have a problem if somebody said Derek Brooks, who they got at the bottom of the first round. They traded back into the first round to get Derek Brooks. That might have been the greatest move they've ever made. So to get two Hall of Famers in the 95 draft was pretty damn special.
Michael asks, which former Bucks coach, new NFC South coach, lasts longer, Raheem Morris or Dave Canales?
Ooh, what a great question. Who asked this question?
Michael.
Outstanding. I would say Raheem Morris. And the reason I would say that is, well, there's several reasons. One, I think ownership is going to be a lot more patient with Raheem because they've had him as an interim head coach before. They've had him as an assistant head coach before. I think the general manager and him are in lockstep with the ownership. Remember, the Falcons had a chance, and the stories have been coming up of late in SI and other places about how Robert Kraft worked against Bill Belichick when he, you know, got to Atlanta and was trying to get that job. But they're very comfortable with what Raheem represents, with what he's trying to do, and they got Kirk Cousins. It remains to be seen, you know, how he comes off the Achilles injury and what he's got left and all of that stuff. What's uncertain about Carolina is their ownership. I mean, David Tepper has no patience whatsoever. Now, you know, new GM that's, you know, hired Dave Canales and worked with him in Seattle a bunch of years. So, you know, Dan Morgan, maybe that works, that maybe they give those guys a little more time. But Bryce Young certainly still is unproven. I think he's going to be a good player, but they got to put pieces around him. And I don't think there's ever, in my time, I don't think I've ever seen a guy go from quarterback's coach to first-time play caller after 15 years in the NFL to head coach the next season. It just doesn't happen. Like, that is as meteoric a rise through the ranks. Not that he didn't pay his dues, because, like I said, he's not, you know, his second year in the NFL. I mean, he was in Seattle for a very long time working for Pete Carroll. But how is it that Pete Carroll passed over this guy three or four times for coordinators, and then he comes to Tampa, he gets his shot, good for him. Now he's off to be a head coach. They got to solve Bryce Young. They got to make that guy whole again. They got to build a team. And I don't know that, you know, Dave might have gotten more credit than he deserved for what Baker Mayfield did in Tampa, because it's kind of like this. It's like, he was the quarterback's coach in Seattle. And so, therefore, everybody said, well, then you get credit for Geno Smith, right? What a revival he made of Geno Smith. Then he comes to Tampa, and he's a coordinator. Well, wait a minute. You got credit as a quarterback's coach for Geno Smith, so doesn't that mean that the Bucs quarterback's coach should get credit for Baker Mayfield? But now that you're coordinator, you're taking credit for that success too? You see what I'm saying? You can't have it both ways. And all I know is, however it happened, he's the head coach in Carolina. They were one of the worst teams in the NFL. They lost some pieces on top of that. I believe in their quarterback, but I don't think Dave Canales is ready to be the head coach in this league. He may prove me wrong. He may be a better head coach than he was a play caller. But even if he is, I don't know that David Tepper is going to give him and Morgan that much time to try to turn that around. That feels to me like, you know, this is the new Dan Snyder of the NFL, right? This is the guy that's kind of goes rogue and rips everything up every year or two. So I think Raheem, being a known commodity to Arthur Blank and Rich McKay and those guys, will have more of a chance, you know, to make this thing work. And I also think he has a better football team right now. So I would say Raheem at this point.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
All right, Steve asks, USF's next football conference will be?
Well, I mean, once they're, if they leave the AAC, is that what we're assuming?
Leave, I suppose it's leave or get annexed by another conference or.
However that happens, right?
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong about this, Steve. I think it's going to be the Big Ten.
I think there's going to be a super conference.
Well, that's a different question.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know if the
64 team super conference is what you're talking about.
Well, there's been, I've seen proposals
12 divisions
of a 70 team conference, and then there's 70 permanent members, and then 10 that relegate, up.
Yeah. Sure, if you want to go that route, you're probably correct.
Here's the thing about.
Let's just deal with what the conferences are today.
So here's the thing about Big Ten or going to SEC for any of these schools.
Or the ACC, if it still exists.
Well, the ACC is in a little different scenario. But for the Big Ten or SEC, if you add South Florida.
Yeah.
Or pick your school, doesn't matter. Whatever school you want to add.
Yeah.
How much more television money are you getting from ESPN, Fox, CBS, et cetera? Because you're dividing it now instead of between 18 to 19 or 20.
Well, but here's the thing about that dividing stuff. Like, they don't have to give a full share to the newest member of the tribe.
But they don't.
Right. But I would say this. You could do worse than to have a team in the third largest state and one that produces as many players as
no question.
They took Rutgers in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Yeah, to get the New York market.
Exactly, but it's not. Mm-hmm. No one in New York really watches Rutgers football. It's Piscataway, New Jersey.
But at the time, it got Big Ten Network carriage in New York on your prime cable package, not your secondary, tertiary sports package.
Yeah.
You know, basically, when you bought cable, you got the Big Ten Network. Like,
right?
You know, that's what ESPN and all these are. When it comes to cable carriage fees, which are meaning less and less now because people are dropping cable, but at the time,
streaming.
Big Ten Network in New York and in Baltimore. With Maryland and that, and you know, DC and all that area.
Yeah.
Big Ten Network was, you know, you paid for the extra sports package that very few people subscribed to.
Mm.
When you added those schools, all of a sudden now it was on your prime cable with ESPN and Fox Sports and, you know, the main sports channel. So now you went from a handful of cable subscribers to every cable subscriber in the area, basically. At whatever the cost was for the Big Ten Network. I mean, that's the whole purpose of adding Rutgers and Maryland in the Big Ten.
I get it. I just look at Florida and you say, okay, so who's here? Florida State, Miami. Mm-hmm. Those are both ACC schools that the ACC is a wreck right now, and I don't know if it'll even exist in a couple of years. Both those teams probably want out of that. Florida State certainly is. They're in court about it.
Yes.
And so, you know, UCF – went to the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
So the Big 12 saw a good reason to come into this state. I just don't see why, and I don't think it'll be the SEC, but I don't see why the Big 10 wouldn't want to hit the third most populous state.
Oh, I think they would love to. I think they would love to hit, you know, Georgia Tech in Atlanta and, you know, there's schools like that. And granted, the Big 10 has pretty strict standards academically, and USF is one of the schools in the, I forget, American Association of Universities or whatever it's called.
AAU, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so that helps in that regard for sure.
Yeah.
You know, the question is there enough, you know, USF picked a bad time to struggle in football and basketball a couple years
ago? Well, they also were late to the stadium party.
Well, that too.
As it turns out.
But also their, you know, the performance on the field couldn't have hit it at a worse time.
It didn't help, but mm-hmm. I don't know that. I don't know that current performance history certainly matters, but I don't know how much.
Well, but when you were looking at the times, go back 5-6 years ago when you were looking between UCF and USF.
Oh, at that time, yeah.
UCF yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying attractive. Today. I'm saying, you know, five, 6 years ago when the carousel started again.
But would, except for that period, would you have ever envisioned UCF supplanting USF as a Power Five school before USF? I mean, they used to look at UCF as mm-hmm. the little stepbrother.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, they build a stadium and some things happen, and now they're going to the Big 12. Like, that should – I sort of, if there's blame to go around, I think it's with USF's, you know, slow to the party to recognize how much the stadium game means.
I don't know how fully administration. I don't mean athletics. I mean the administration of the university was behind athletics.
Yeah, I don't.
It wasn't a priority.
It wasn't. No.
Where other schools, it was.
Yeah.
Whether it's right or wrong.
They just had better. They're just faster. They had better mm-hmm. plans. They got the stuff done. Yeah. So they appointed resources and they got it done. But I don't know if the ACC is not going to hang on in its current state. You know what's going to happen to conferences like the AAC. You know, a lot of teams are going to get plucked here and there. It's mm-hmm. going to happen everywhere. I mean, the face of college football. I think you're right. We're going to have a super conference super league with two.
Now that
two
the SEC and Big Ten are kind of working together on things, for a while they control, did. For a while they were
gonna,
rivals.
They're going like, to control football.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But for a while they weren't. Sports. They weren't willing to work together. It was kind of a rival, and
right.
You
right.
know, remember the Big Ten did this deal with the Pac-12 and the ACC.
Oh, yeah.
For things, and you know, it was like, you know, it was kind of.
It was
not talking to each other. Now they're kind of like, hey, let's figure this out because the NCAA ain't doing anything.
Yeah, no, it was every man for himself. But those mm-hmm. two, because of what they earn in the networks, which is so, you know, mm-hmm. astronomically bigger than any other conferences, they get to control it because they control TV.
Yep.
And the TV money is king and the programming and all of that. So, you know, whether it's, you know, ABC, ESPN, and, you know, College Game Day or, you know, the Big Ten game with Fox or whatever. Like, they, TV rules, and those two conferences have the biggest deals. And so, they're going to control what happens from here on out. I'm all for, you want to go with some super conferences and have a couple divisions in each one, I'm all for it. You know, I mean, what the hell? You might as well take sort of the NFL model since you're paying your players now anyway. Or a lot of them were getting paid.
Anyway. Well, they're not paying the players. They're just facilitating NIL money.
Name, image, and likeness, yeah. Okay. By the way, did you see where Caitlin Clark is going to have a 7-figure shoe deal with Nike?
I thought it was 8-figure.
No, 8-figure. That's right. It's 8-figure. My bad. Yeah. 7 is a million, right? So 8 figures, yeah.
Did you see how many teams in the WNBA on the games that the Indiana Fever are coming to their market, they're playing at bigger arenas?
Bigger arenas, man. Yeah.
Like in DC, I think they're playing at the Capitals, where the Capitals mm-hmm. and Wizards play.
And for that watch, game. They'll sell it the hell out too.
Yeah, because they've gotten so many the ticket sales,
ticket
the demand
and stuff. Yeah. And they're not gonna be able to keep those shoes on the shelves, let me assure you, or her jersey or anything else. It's gonna be a huge boon for them. But yeah, congratulations, man. To sign that kind of shoe deal. Just phenomenal. I guess it'll take the sting out of the $75,000 a year salary. You donate that to charity, for gosh sakes. My goodness.
We'll wrap it up. Yeah, we're almost an hour in. So
we're good. Okay, let's do it.
Lightning start with the Panthers Sunday at 12:30.
Yankees.
Rays. And then next week's the draft.
That's it. 12:30 Sundays, you say?
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right. Well, we got a busy championship type weekend, if you will. Of course, the Yankees and the Rays take it on up Yankee Stadium. That series begins today, and then of course over the weekend, Sunday at 12:30 p.m., it's Game 1 of the Tampa Bay Lightning at the Florida Panthers. That's just going to be a tremendous series, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'll tell you what. the tickets are much more inexpensive, I saw online, to go down to Sunrise than they're going to be here in Emily.
You can make it back for work Monday morning pretty easy.
You can, and I think there's going to be a good number of Lightning fans make that trip.
I would imagine there would be, absolutely.
It's just one of those series that you can go, and like yep. I said, they're less expensive down there. I think I saw some seats, I don't know, $40-$50 in the top level, and they're okay. a lot more here
yeah.
in the hundreds here at Amelie. So go get you some, and we'll see if the Lightning have one more yeah. Stanley Cup run in them. I really don't know what to expect in any of these series, but particularly this first one's going to be interesting because – and I didn't know this, Steve. No wild card team has ever won the Stanley Cup.
Well, Rick, there's a first time for everything.
Why did I know you were going to say something
like
that?
I mean, you know, no team had ever won a cup in a bubble before, but the Lightning did.
That's true. No team had ever won a Super Bowl during COVID, but and had their home stadium, but the Bucks did.
Yeah,
that's right. So a chance to make more history. That's why they call it history, folks. So, yeah, we'll see.
The Lightning are going for, what, their third Stanley Cup in 5 years, five seasons?
This is just crazy. I don't think we talked about this a little bit before, and we'll end it on this, but, like, you freaking people, as Steve Dooming would say, you guys don't realize you're in the golden era of Tampa sports right now. Like no other, right? Like, pick one, you know? You can romanticize about the 0-2 Bucks or the 0-4 mm-hmm. Lightning. No.
Oh, great teams.
Great teams, great. Championships, yeah. Right? But that was a blip, a mere blip of success on a radar screen. Championships, nonetheless, but a mere blip. Folks.
We had three boat parades in like 14 months.
I know, right? And the thing is, the championship, I mean, the Buccaneers, four straight playoff appearances, three state division championships. The Tampa Bay Rays going, you know, five straight postseasons, yeah. heading for number six if they can get there. And then the Lightning, forget about it, right? I mean,
seven straight playoff appearances, 10 out of 11.
Yeah, it's stupid. What they've led yeah. the way the whole way. So, you know, for anybody to get complacent and go, yeah, I don't know, go just look at some history, man. Like, we are in the golden age right now. And not for nothing, but like, whether you're talking about the NFL, I mean, last year made no sense that the Bucs would do anything. They had to really rally to win the division. But they were oh so close to going to the NFC Championship game.
Yes,
the NFC Championship game, right? Where San Francisco fell behind by about 21 points. And so, you know, when you get in the tournament, man, and same thing. Do I think the Lightning are going to go to the Stanley Cup this year? No, I absolutely don't. Do I think they could lose in the first round? Absolutely, they could. Would it shock me that they found themselves in the Stanley Cup? I'd be very surprised. I wouldn't be shocked. Just wouldn't, because we've seen this group do it. You know, and to think that, you know, you have franchises like that to where you're like, okay, well, wild card or not, like, here they go. You know, they got a shot. They're in the playoffs. They're where they need to be. That's really saying something. And you can say that about all three major teams. So, yeah, enjoy these games. Enjoy the playoffs, obviously, for however long they last. And I'm looking forward to this Rays-Yankees series. I think this will be a good mm-hmm. one, too, because, you know, those teams, when they get together up there, it's usually pretty exciting.
As you listen to this podcast, you'll know who won the Art Ross Trophy. But Nathan MacKinnon still 4 points behind Cooch. They have
how much
10
time
minutes, 10:45 to go in their game, so.
10:45 in the final game. Okay, yep. So he would have to score.
And Colorado's
twice.
Up 5-1, so it's not even like it's
competitive.
So
so they pull off the dogs maybe at this point.
Yeah, it's not over yet, but it looks like Cooch is on his way to winning his second Art Ross Trophy.
Well, that's going to be huge. I mean, that's really amazing if he pulls that off, and we'll see how the voters vote. So. We'll all know together on Monday the results of these games over the weekend. So make sure you come back here. We'll talk NFL draft next week as well. Thanks for listening. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.